Hello and welcome to the France 24 interview. Our guest today is Karim Khan. He is the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, and he is with us from the United Nations headquarters in New York. Thank you very much, Mr. Khan.
No, thank you for having me, Mark. It's a great pleasure to be with you again.
This Thursday, you told the United Nations Security Council that your office had begun investigations into alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in the Darfur region of Sudan in the ongoing fight between the Sudanese armed forces, led by General al-Burhan, and the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group of General Dagalo. What prompted you to make that decision?
Well, I'm obliged to report to the Security Council twice a year. But since the latest outbreak of violence 90 days ago, on the 15th of April, we have been receiving numerous reports from many sources detailing allegations of destruction of property, executions, killings, and rapes. And I've been in contact with both parties privately, and I thought it's necessary to be candid to the Security Council about what we're doing. We have jurisdiction, in my view, in terms of ongoing hostilities. We are investigating it, and so I said that we are investigating those crimes, and we have to find a way to make sure that this time people are held responsible in a timely fashion, because we see these cycles of misery that the weakest, the most marginalized people of Darfur in particular keep suffering the brunt of this pursuit of power.
Right. I want to get to some reports we had from, first of all, from the UN Human Rights Office. It said the bodies of at least 87 people, including seven women, seven children, were allegedly killed last month and buried in a mass grave outside El Geneina. It's the capital of West Darfur. The UN added that it had credible evidence that it was the Rapid Support Forces that were responsible for the killing. Just a few days ago, Human Rights Watch also accused the same forces of executing 28 ethnic Masalit civilians in the town of Misteray. Are those the kind of allegations that you're looking at?
Well, I referenced particularly the High Commissioner's report, Volker Turk's report, yesterday to the Council. We also have other reports from UNITAMS, the United Nations support mission in Sudan, and the work of Volker Perthes. So there's a variety of allegations against the Sudanese armed forces and against the RSF as well. And we need to make sure that people are held to a basic standard that genocide and war crimes and crimes against humanity are not acceptable. And we are investigating those, and we'll leave no stone unturned to the best of our ability to make sure that any crimes committed result in investigations and prosecutions before courts, international or domestic.
Right. You mentioned the word genocide. Last month, the West Darfur government was actually killed after he accused the RSF of carrying out a genocide against the Masalit people. I interviewed Kenya's president recently, and he said there were already signs of genocide in Sudan. Is this also the kind of information you're gathering?
We will gather evidence from a variety of sources. We'll seek to authenticate it, and we will then label it once in the course of our investigations and see whether or not it constitutes a war crime, a crime against humanity, or an offence of genocide. But that determination is part of the process of the investigation. So I won't prejudge the legal characterization now. We have to investigate incriminating and exonerating evidence equally, and that's what we've been doing over the last period, and we're going to try to accelerate that work to ensure that there's justice to people that are without shelter, literally and figuratively. And the law right now must mean something to them, because they have hundreds of thousands have fled into Chad, and hundreds of thousands of people are homeless because their homes have been burnt and they're in fear of their lives.
Right. In your report, you mentioned sexual and gender-based violence, including alleged campaigns of mass rape.
Absolutely. These are reports from many sources. And as I told the Council yesterday, given the number of communications from the wide variety of sources, I'm not in a position to authenticate those reports right now. I don't prejudge issues. Our job is to collect, to verify, to separate truth from fiction, and to make sure that any evidence that we rely upon is authenticated and is reliable, and that's what we're seeking to do, and then we will make decisions about what, if anything, we can present to the independent judges of the ICC, who will make ultimate decisions as to whether or not warrants should be issued. And so we're in that stage right now.
Right. You said that you had spoken to those in charge in Sudan. So have you warned them directly, both generals I mentioned earlier in the interview, that they could end up in The Hague?
Well, I think I've met both General Burhan and General Hameti face to face. I've been to Sudan twice in the 2 years I've been prosecutor. I gave a briefing, in fact, from Khartoum last year, and I think they're very clear that my responsibility is to vindicate the rights of the most vulnerable, to make sure that there is accountability, and to make sure that the Security Council referral in 2005 is not simply a dead letter. But I think they're in no doubt that there are responsibilities for every commander, every leader themselves, or any foot soldier, and the law has to apply equally, and human life has to be valued in all parts of the world. And certainly Darfur and Sudan cannot be an exception to that. But to deliver on that promise, to deliver on that basic principle, the international community needs to stand up and support the 2005 referral. It was the Security Council that said that the situation constitutes a threat to international peace and security. I saw 2 days ago the United Kingdom sanctioned six companies, three allegedly allied to the Sudanese armed forces and three allegedly linked to the RSF. But in its collective action with the African Union, with the European Union, with the United Nations, with every state, whether you're a state party to the ICC or a non-state party, to try to protect the most vulnerable that look to these international organizations like the ICC or the United Nations for hope and for protection. And if we don't act, we're going to be viewed as irrelevant and we are purveyors of false promises and false hope. And I think this is something I've been saying since I became prosecutor, whether it's in Ukraine or the Myanmar, the Bangladeshis, the Rohingyas in Bangladesh, or whether it's Libya or whether it's Sudan, we need to deliver for people that look to these structures that have been built after the Second World War for hope. And we need to show that justice is more than a word that is uttered in The Hague or in studios like this.
Right. How do you gather evidence? You have been to Sudan, but I understand the UN is not welcome in Sudan. It says special envoy was just kicked out.
Well, this is unfortunately not unique to Sudan. There are situations where the countries are not cooperative. It's, of course, much more difficult. It is much more difficult when one can't enter the country. I can't enter the country right now. I've also tried since April to get into Sudan, and the door is closed. The United Nations, you're right, is not there. And there is a deliberate, I think, non-cooperation from all parties in Sudan right now. But, you know, there's also increased ability in this day and age with satellite, with the diaspora that has the exodus of people into the neighboring countries. I announced both a call for witnesses yesterday to the council. We have now a platform that is a secure portal that allows people anywhere in the world, in Sudan, in neighboring countries like Chad or even in France, to send information, video, photographs, in a very secure manner to my office. And then we also have various technological tools that we've now launched that will help us go through, ingest those data sets, and to take on leads that are offered and to verify any evidence or information that is provided. So there's a whole panoply of measures. It's difficult, but it requires cooperation. And it requires states really to act, because at stake is not only the individual that is suffering, the Masalit in Darfur, or the child, or the woman, or the man, the old, or the young. All of those should be enough for us to wake from our slumber and act with greater focus. But I think also what's at stake is the international legal system. Because if we keep showing that we're not fit for purpose, if we're not showing sufficiently that these international institutions that have been created, the United Nations or the International Criminal Court, are backed by states in times of peril, we run the risk of diluting the impact of something that It took the Holocaust, it took the Second World War to create, and I think we have to show that the various institutions of the world are fit for purpose, and that requires us to work together and try to show the impact of what we can do together. And I think that applies to international criminal justice as much as it applies to anything else.
Very quickly, because we're running out of time, there are warrants that the ICC issued against the former president Omar al-Bashir, two of his ministers. They were held in custody, but I understand, and I believe that's your understanding as well, that they have now been freed by the new authorities. This is clearly a sign of defiance towards the ICC, isn't it?
Well, we have one trial underway, which is an important achievement. What the ambassador, what the permanent representative of Sudan said yesterday in relation to former President Omar al-Bashir and Mr. Hussein is that he stated that they were in a hospital in Sudan. This has not been independently confirmed to my office. But it does seem that they're not in custody. They are in a hospital. This is what is being alleged by the government of Sudan. But I have no means of verifying that right now.
Right. Do you believe that you will be able to judge other crimes? Because your jurisdiction is just Darfur. Isn't it a problem for the balance of your probe?
Well, I'm looking into that. We clearly have, in my assessment, jurisdiction in relation to the ongoing violence that we've seen since April in relation to Darfur, and I'm looking at whether or not, in terms of the 2005 resolution by the Council, resolution 1593, whether or not that gives us any broader jurisdiction, but I haven't made a determination on that yet. But clearly we have jurisdiction in relation to Darfur, and I think ultimately the failure to do justice in relation to resolution 1593 and the failure collectively by the international community to reduce space for impunity and to increase space for justice has sown the seeds for this second round of violence 20 years later. And we need to finally get up and smell the roses, if I put it bluntly. We need to finally realize that we need to do better to vindicate the promises of Nuremberg of never again, because unless we do that, we're not going to only see more violence, I fear, in Sudan, in Darfur, but in other parts of the world, because we can't be a toothless tiger. The international apparatus needs to have teeth, and it needs to have teeth. It needs support from every single state of the United Nations. And every individual, every civil society group should raise their voice on the side of justice and against criminality of the type that we're seeing in Sudan, but also, unfortunately, that we're seeing in other parts of the world as well.
Karim Khan, I want to thank you very much for being with us from the United Nations headquarters in New York. And I want to thank you all for watching this interview here on France 24.